The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, the historian Rutger Bregman caused some controversy at Davos a couple of years ago when he made these comments.
This is my first time at Davos, and I find it quite a bewildering experience, to be honest. I mean, 1,500 private jets have flown in here to hear Sir David Attenborough speak about, you know, how we're wrecking the planet. And, I mean, I hear people talk in the language of participation and justice and equality and transparency. But then, I mean, almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water.
Well, he had been invited to talk about his first book, which argued the case for a universal basic income. Now he's followed that up with a second book called Humankind, A Hopeful History. In it, he advocates that people are intrinsically good. They want to be creative and contribute to society. He says it's high time companies and governments start to trust their people. I spoke to him earlier and I started by asking him about the universal basic income. I asked him if, to some extent, we are seeing the beginnings of that with payments governments have put in place to get through the crisis?
I think so, yes. I mean, just 5 or 6 years ago, when I published my first book, for example, about basic income, it was a completely forgotten and unrealistic idea. Most people said, well, that's never going to work. You know, people will stop working. They'll waste the money on alcohol and drugs. But ever since then, the idea has really moved into the political mainstream. I don't know if you've seen this, for example, but I thought it was really fascinating, the editorial in the Financial Times in early April. That's here you have the one of the world's biggest business papers suddenly arguing that we need to be talking about basic income, higher taxes on the wealthy, you know, a bigger role of the state in investing in the economy. If you would have told that to someone 5 or 6 years ago, people would have said you're crazy. But here we are.
When you look at the exploration you did in for the book Humankind and looking at lots of different scenarios in history that depict a more or paint a more positive image of human nature and how we truly are, I suppose. When you look around, what do you see gives you hope for the future?
Oh, what really gives me hope is that there's now a whole new generation of leaders and entrepreneurs who sort of try to build their organizations around a different view of what human beings are really like. So for example, in my book, I've got one case study of an organization called Buurtzorg, Neighborhood Care in the Netherlands, that works entirely without managers. It's only self-directed teams of nurses who decide for themselves, you know, who they want to hire, what kind of additional education they need, you know, what their schedule for the week is going to be. And it works incredibly, incredibly well. So they deliver care at a cheaper cost and of higher quality than all the competitors. And it just shows us that there's a different way forward, right? That we can actually trust employees who are intrinsically motivated to do their best possible job. And I think that's really an example to so many entrepreneurs around the globe.
I was reading a review of the book in the Financial Times, and there were a list of comments at the bottom, you know, that readers have made. And maybe in some respects for your own track record, the Financial Times is like going into the belly of the beast, perhaps. But there was one comment where a reader suggested that the kind of cooperation and altruism that you have found and highlighted and you articulate kind of only works for groups of up to about 50. And in fact, it's really when you get into larger groups, whether that be a corporation, whether it be a society, a community, that things actually really do start to break down and that better nature gets suppressed.
Well, I would disagree there. I mean, the company that I just talked about, Neighborhood Care, has 15,000 employees. So that's much more than 50. And I know that researchers for a long time believed that 150 were sort of the perfect number for a group size. But now we've got new evidence from anthropology, for example, who've studied nomadic hunter-gatherers. And we actually discovered that their networks are often way, way bigger. And that is exactly the reason why we conquered the globe, right? Instead of the Neanderthals, because we're so incredibly good at cooperating, of learning from other people. You know, on an individual level, human beings are not that special. We're not very strong. We're not very smart either. But we're just really good at learning from each other and building much bigger groups. And I think that's our true superpower.
When you look back at the issue of fairness in the tax system and the role that business does play in creating jobs and wealth creation, and if anything, the close down in the economy has shown the value and importance that, businesses as employers have in our society as well. When you look back, was there a particular time or a particular place where you felt that the tax rates and the distribution of the wealth actually worked?
Well, I mean, people sometimes make the argument that higher taxes will destroy the economy. Well, you know, I'm a historian, and then you look at, for example, the 50s and the 60s, and you look at the UK and the US, have much, much higher tax rates. You know, the top marginal income tax rate in the US and the UK was around 90% at some point. And still, we had the highest rate of economic growth and a lot of really fundamental innovation. So when it comes to jobs, you know, let's just focus on what people are actually doing. We now have got some new evidence from two Dutch economists who did a big research project where they asked people around the globe, do you think your job is actually valuable to society? And 25% of people, you know, in the modern workforce say, no, you know, I doubt that. I don't think it's really valuable. And the striking fact is that there were four times as many socially meaningless jobs in the private sector as in the public sector. Right. So, that should really set us to think, you know, what is really valuable? What gives really meaning to our lives and to society?
But just because the employee feels it isn't valuable doesn't mean that it isn't of value to someone. You know what I mean? That explains how they feel about it rather than depicting the complete reality of it, that it has no value in society or to an economy.
Well, you know, I think that's a bit of a paternalistic response, to be honest. If someone says, you know, I'm the expert on my job and I don't think it's really valuable, then probably that person is right. I mean, we've got so many people working in finance or in marketing or consultancy who have great LinkedIn profiles, who earn quite a lot of money, but, you know, spent most of their days writing reports no one ever is going to read or sending emails to people they don't like. And they really wonder at the end of the day what they're doing with their lives. And I think this is one of the great tragedies of our time, just the extraordinary waste of talent. We've got so many people who are just too smart to be working as a banker. They're too smart to be working as a tax lawyer or accountant. You know, they could be thinking about what some of the great solutions for the great challenges are we're facing right now, whether it's climate change or the cure for cancer or something like that. So that's something that's really one of the great tragedies of today, just a waste of talent.
But if those jobs truly have no value, not only they don't feel valued by the person who's doing them, but they actually have no value, does that not contradict the idea that large corporations are ruthlessly efficient and that they're actually so driven by profit? Why would they have all of these employees and pay them weekly salaries when they don't really need them because they don't do anything of economic value as well as personal or social value to the people doing the job?
Well, let's take the comparison of being a pirate in the 17th century. So if you were a pirate in the 17th century, that was a hard job, right? It's you have to be good at torturing other people with stealing, etc. You have to be able to, you know, hijack a ship, etc. I mean, that probably takes real skills to do that. And if you're the sort of the entrepreneur of the pirate ship, then, you know, all the other pirates are of value to you, right? They make money for you by stealing from other people. But that doesn't mean that on a sort of a societal level, pirates were valuable, right? So if someone would have said, let's abolish piracy, and then the pirates would said, yes, but what about our jobs? Then we wouldn't have seen that as a great response. But nowadays, you know, where we have sort of modern pirates, like companies that help other companies to avoid taxes, etc., then we say, oh, but what about their jobs? But, you know, on a substantial level, there's not a real difference between the pirates of the 17th century and the pirates of the 21st century.
Yeah, I think we've got quite a lot of pirates around in the 21st century, Rutger. Yeah. Rutger Breckman, author of Humankind, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me, Richard.